This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
As we go to air, sources are saying why missing baby Emmanuel will never be found. This as the killer dad suspect, Jay Harrow, begs for help staging baby Emmanuel's kidnap. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Where is 7-month-old baby Emmanuel? Questions swirling. Did the baby disappear 9 days before the alleged kidnap when mommy was attacked in the parking lot of a sporting goods store? Was the baby really missing 9 days before that? Could he be alive? We haven't found a body yet. Where is baby Emmanuel? And why are sources stating this 7-month-old infant child will, quote, never be found? It all starts here.
Just before 8 p.m. Thursday night, San Bernardino sheriffs arrive and begin searching the strip mall and parking lot. Canine units are dispatched to the scene as well. Helicopters overhead. San Bernardino Sheriff's Department joined by neighboring Riverside County deputies to aid in a comprehensive search that stretches through the night.
This was preventable in numerous ways.
To Dave Mack, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Dave, thank you for being with us. The mom says that she goes to Big Five, it's a sporting goods store, to get her other son a mouth guard so he can play sports. That she gets out of the vehicle to change baby Emmanuel's diaper. She hears one word from a male, hola, and then she's attacked from behind. Hey, she's attacked from behind. Let's see her black eye that she got from that attack from behind. That when she wakes up, the baby is gone. Is that correct? Yes, no.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so then she goes into the store when she comes to and ask, has anybody seen the baby? Do I have that right so far?
You are correct.
Okay, Dave Mack. Then the dad shows up on the scene. Listen.
Jake Harrow shows up at Bada Clothing next to the Big Five and talks to assistant manager Liz Mesa the morning after his son is kidnapped. She says he was trying to appear upset, trying to cry, rubbing his eyes, breathing heavy, but no tears as he asks for help finding his infant son. Harrow is wearing a hoodie and it's 90 degrees, and the manager is shocked to see that Harrow is just walking around the parking lot, not out searching for his son. Mesa says it just felt off.
He just came in and asked if we had any information, and please just let him know, but there was no tears, just exaggerated kind of facial expressions.
That's from our friends at U.S. Sun. Okay, I want to analyze what we've just heard, Dave Mack. Now, this is a woman that works at the clothing store next to Big Five. Let's see Big Five Sporting Goods again. It's a little strip mall, and according to this witness, Liz Mesa, the assistant manager, Harrow comes in asking for help. Tell me exactly what we learned from her, Dave Mack.
Well, she says that when he came by, that he was trying to look upset. He was, you know, trying to breathe heavy. He was rubbing his eyes. He was trying to act like he was very concerned. And she could tell it was an act because it just wasn't real. There were no tears, first of all. But second of all, he wasn't dressed appropriately for somebody who's going to be out looking for their son on this particular day. He's wearing a hoodie. She points that out because, you know, this is August in California and it's hot. So he had no business to be out looking for his son. And why is he looking in that parking lot? That was her other question. She pointed out they close at 7 o'clock. Okay. Their parking lot is absolutely empty. Right next door is the Big K, or it's got a parking lot and they're open a little later, but there's not a lot of activity, Nancy. And that's what she was trying to point out, is that they obviously did not know where they were when they're putting this story out there, because it doesn't match the geography, doesn't match the area they're in at all.
Okay, you know what, Dave Mack, I think you've gone too far out on the limb claiming that just because the dad was wearing a hoodie that somehow he's, quote, you sound like Prince Andrew, who said, I couldn't have molested Virginia Giuffre in the Epstein case because those were my traveling clothes. Right. So you're saying this was all wrong because he was wearing a hoodie. Okay. Please don't say that anymore. Don't tell that to anybody else, okay? Because it's raising a lot of questions about your reporting. But that said, the other part I found really interesting. He came in, asked if we had any info. If so, please let me know. No tears, just exaggerated facial expressions, rubbing his eyes, breathing heavily. Okay. That's interesting because you know what? To Dr. John Delatorre. Delatorre is a renowned psychologist, a mediator. His specialty is forensic psychology. Dr. Delatorre, I know that this woman that works at the Beta clothing store beside Big Five is not a shrink like you. She is not a nonverbal message expert. She's not like a jury consultant that watches all the jurors, if their tics and their quirks to see if they would be good or bad on the jury for their client. But she is a regular person like most of us, that when you get an odd sense about somebody, you better listen. Now, a lot of guys, especially men, say, oh, you know, that's just a woman, a nervous woman reading too much into it. I think hunches are very valid, and I believe that they are born of thousands of years of evolution, that you pick up things you don't even realize you're seeing or hearing or feeling or smelling. I mean, it could be anything. So the fact that he's wearing a hoodie, yeah, I don't care. But her feeling that it, quote, just felt off, I want to follow up on that, Delatorre.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, she's not a mental health professional, but she is a human being working in the service industry. So she interacts with people all of the time. And all of these people, she never knows who's going to be coming in and for what reason and what, you know, their day-to-day experiences are. She knows about this case and is expecting to experience something coming off of this man. And she doesn't get it. And that's already a red flag, right? Her antenna is already up. So now she's going to be looking at more things. What are the other inconsistencies that are going on when she tells herself, look, if this was my child, this is how I would be. Comparing those emotional states to the person that she's seeing right in front of her are inconsistent. And that's what makes him just seem more suspect.
Okay, brace yourself. Philip Dubé joining us, veteran trial lawyer out of the L.A. jurisdiction. Jump in, Dubé.
I think it's ridiculous to assume that parents who are in search of a missing child have to follow some type of a blueprint, almanac, or connect the dots in some way, shape, or form to suggest that they're not behaving the way parents who might be in despair would display. Because if you think about it, this is something that may never happen during the course and scope of running a business, and certainly during the course and scope of raising children. So I don't know what anybody's talking about in assuming that there is the right way to behave.
Didn't you tell me on a prior program that you don't have any children? So what do you know about what people are going through raising children? Because I've told you what happened when John David went missing in a Toys R Us. Wait, Babies R Us. I did not try to make myself cry.
It's self-preservation. It's preservation of your family. You don't have to be a parent to know that a kid is missing and that you can kind of pitch in and help find the child. That's absurd. And to suggest that either, you know, how you're dressed, how you behave, whether or not you're crying, should follow that playbook in determining whether or not you're up to no good, I think is an unfair assessment.
Okay, I knew you would say that. Straight out to Allie Neal, joining us, co-founder Revved Up Kids. She has been fighting for years to protect children from sex abuse, trafficking, and other forms of abuse. Allie, thank you for being with us. Why is Dubé saying that? Because you have dealt with so many parents that are suffering because they can't find their child. And I know defense attorneys say there is no playbook, but actually there is a playbook. I've never seen a parent that did not show some sort of emotion when they're looking for a lost child, Allie.
I would agree with you, Nancy, but I also would agree that everybody has different ways that they show or hide emotion. We can't read his mind. And, you know, the store clerk, yes, she was observing what she believed was fake behavior, but none of that's going to hold up in court. His behavior when he walked into that store to ask about
Wait. I don't know what you're saying. It won't, quote, hold up in court.
I mean, the fact that
are you suggesting that if this ever goes to trial, the jury cannot hear evidence of his demeanor at the clothing store? Because that's just bass backwards. They will hear that. And they will wonder, like we are, why was he trying to make himself cry?
They can hear it, but I think the defense would turn around and say, you weren't in his head. You don't know how he responds to, you know, crisis. Some people just shut down. Some people, you know, so it feels like speculation.
Okay, Allie. Okay, Allie, Steve Fisher, let's respond to that. Steve Fisher joining us, missing persons private investigator, search and rescue specialist. You can find him at searchinvestigations.org. Steve, you have made a living. This is what you do day in, day out. You find missing people, especially children. You go through all sorts of searches. You do all-terrain searches. You've overseen water searches. You've overseen dump site searches. Name it, you've done it. So, Steve, Allie Neal agrees with Philip Dubay that parents cannot act upset at all when their child is missing. In fact, in this case, the witness says he was trying to make himself cry. Now, I find that very odd behavior. The hoodie doesn't mean anything to me, but the demeanor and what you're about to find out about them just hanging around in the parking lot, not actively looking. Like, what do they think? Baby Emmanuel's going to walk back into the parking lot. He's 7 months old. But making yourself cry or trying to, that's just wrong. I don't know why they're saying that that's normal.
Yeah, I've never seen, I always see frantic, you know, people that are just, you know, have no control of their emotions, actually. And that they both seem to kind of have that same reaction to me. It was kind of forced, it was staged, and it was, you know, look like a more of a press opportunity.
You know what? We have barely touched the tip of the iceberg, so I'm going to move us forward. Listen.
If their baby had been kidnapped, they would have been out looking for them. Same with like my sisters with their kids. You know, it's just not something to just hang around in a parking lot and then just be mingling with your family. I don't know. We close at 7. So for them to say it happened at like 7:47, the whole parking lot is empty basically by that time.
Back to Dave Mack. That is exactly what you were saying. If there had been a baby kidnapped, they would have been out looking for them. They were just hanging around the parking lot, like hanging out with the family, like tailgating in the parking lot. She goes on to state, and that's from our friends at U.S. Sun, we close at 7. So for them to say it happened at 7:47, the whole parking lot is empty. Is that what you were saying earlier, Dave Mack? Explain.
Okay, not exactly, Nancy. The store next door to the Big Five actually closes at 7, and their parking lot is adjacent to the Big Five. Big Five stays open later than that store next door, but for the most part, the parking lots are fairly empty, certainly empty next to Big Five, and the Big Five is thinning out. There's not a lot of activity there after 7 o'clock at night. That's what the manager was trying to say.
Okay, got it. Guys, it goes on from there. In the last hours, a lot happening in the case, a lot happening in the search for baby Emmanuel. Listen.
It's appropriate to have a press conference because it was the defendants in this case that had a press conference first. And they did so in order to tell the public, the media, and ultimately law enforcement that their child had been kidnapped.
I was going to get the diaper and somebody said, hola. And I woke up right here on the floor. And I didn't see Emmanuel.
He was a healthy baby. He was crawling. He was kicking. He was playing with his toys. Whoever took our son, please give him back.
I'm watching his demeanor as he's speaking. His voice seemingly is cracking, but he's not crying. And
He doesn't look distressed at all. That was from our friends at KTLA and ABC7. You were first hearing Mike Hestron from Riverside County DA's office stating they were having a press conference because the mom and dad had already had their own press conference. With me, special guest, Dr. Eric Eason, board-certified forensic pathologist, and you can find him on Facebook at Eric August Eason. Dr. Eason, thank you for being with us. How can she explain that she was attacked from behind, but yet has a black eye on the front of her face?
Yeah, could have fallen forward, hit something. She could have spun around after being attacked from behind and been punched in the face. Those are all possibilities.
Dave Mack, I want you to explain to me what Big Five employees state about the mom coming in earlier, before baby Emmanuel goes missing, to state that her car had been vandalized.
That's exactly what happened. She went to the store and asked, hey, she actually said, my car's been broken into in your parking lot. I'm just wondering, do y'all have any surveillance cameras pointed in this direction at all that might have been able to capture my car in the parking lot? And can you show me where it is? And she was able to find out exactly what they had for surveillance in the parking lot. So she already knew ahead of time. And by the way, they don't live in that area. It would have been out of the way for her to be at that store any day other than when she was there.
Dave Mack, when do they say that that happened, that the mom came in stating her car had been vandalized and asking if there were cameras, surveillance cameras, on any of the stores?
This is one of those stories, Nancy, where we've been told that she came in 3 days earlier. We have, since they don't have any cameras, we can't actually find video proof that she did that, Nancy. But that is what has been said by employees of the store.
Well, Steve Fisher, wouldn't it be a matter of getting her cell phone and tracking the cell phone to determine if it had been in the parking lot 2 or 3 days earlier?
Absolutely. That's something that Cellebrite can do, a Cellebrite on her phone. They'll be able to find out that information. There's also, but I don't think she knew, is there's lots of other surveillance cameras that are pointing, that are showing that parking lot from across the street and other ways. You know, I actually went to the Big Five and spoke to the employees and that witnessed her come in, and they clearly, you know, remember her coming in, and it was suspicious to them. And then when she came in with the kidnap claim, that's immediately what they thought of. They're like, this lady was here. And what they said to me was earlier in the month, although this happened fairly early in the month. So,
okay, wait a minute. Steve Fisher, explain exactly what the employees told you.
Sure. I went into the Big Five. I was there the day after the kidnapping claim happened. And they told me that she had come in and asked, she had said that her car had been broken into and she wanted to know if there was surveillance because she needed it for the insurance claim. And they told her that they did not have exterior cameras on the building. And that was it. You know, of course, at that time, they don't know what's about to happen a few days later. But that's what they told me.
Philip Dubay, what about that? Quite the coinkydink, right? Dubay, don't you just hate it when your clients case the joint days ahead of time to find out if there's surveillance video? I would be interested to find out if she really filed an insurance claim when her car was, quote, burglarized. What about it, Dubay? And she goes back to the same place and gets attacked a second time. Same parking lot, same car, same everything.
If I were defending her, I would put those store employees through the Vegematic. I would just really left, right, and center, just cross-examine them like they have never been crossed before. And I would want to know just how many employees are saying that about my quote-unquote client. So, for example, this was your search and rescue debut, wasn't it? I bet you checked the lighting before you spoke. You shut off all the fluorescence and make sure you had bright light and number 2 pancake to rub on your nose and your forehead.
What are
forehead.
You even talking
Who's
about?
That first time?
Wait, what are In you other talking words, about? I would bright try, lights? Did you say pancake?
To show
makeup?
That they're exaggerating.
Oh, okay. To Steve Fisher, does he look like a camera crew to you? He just looks like a regular guy to me. He goes in and talks to them about what happened, and they volunteer, not just one of them, under, you can take Fisher down, okay, put Dubay back up. Dubay, to believe your theory all of the employees that opened up to Steve Fisher would all have to be in on it. They'd all have to be part of a conspiracy to lie about Mrs. Harrow. They'd all have to be in on it to get Miss Harrow that they've never met before this. They don't know her. There's no grudge. There's no axe to grind. But yet they're all willing to lie to a guy that just walks through the front door and asks what happened. Is that your story? They're all getting together to lie on Rebecca Harrow.
Well, Philip Dubé in his personal capacity would absolutely buy it. But if I were defending her, I would do whatever I could to make it look like they all put their heads together to take the lady down.
Wait a minute. That's your Vegematic that you're bragging about? I'm going to put the witnesses through a Vegematic.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, nobody uses a Vegematic anymore. Unless you, I chop by hand, of course, but everybody else uses a, what do you say, Cuisinart. All right. So that said, that's your Vegematic. You're going to accuse them of having their star turn with Steve Fisher, who is not a camera person?
If I were defending them, absolutely. I would do whatever I could to challenge their perceptions, their recollections, and their incentive to want to take the lady down. And you'd be amazed how many times.
Dubé, you need a search warrant. You need a search warrant to search all the employees' home and find that pancake makeup you're talking about. This is the vats and vats and pots of pancake makeup and heavy powder that they were going to apply. For the moment that Steve Fisher happens to walk through their door, they were ready for that. Okay, what about this, Dubé?
In the early stages of the investigation, detectives challenge Rebecca Harrow on inconsistencies in her story, and she stops cooperating. Both parents are asked to take a polygraph, but Jake Harrow refuses the polygraph without his lawyer present.
Okay, so I guess you think that's normal behavior, too. When your child goes missing and your wife is attacked in a parking lot, you won't take a poly? Because of what? What are you afraid of?
Of inconsistencies, imperfect, unreliable science. And we've seen this before. Remember when the Madeline McCabe baby was abducted in Portugal? The parents
Maddie
would not
McCann
submit to a call.
McCann.
Got the name. Maddie McCann. Remember that? The parents would not submit to the polygraph, not because it was consciousness of guilt. It was consciousness of scientific imperfection. That was the problem. Can you imagine then being detained and held based on imperfect science? No. So what do? You clam up, you ask for a lawyer, particularly in a situation when you're being confronted with quote unquote inconsistencies, and you have turned a search and rescue into an adversarial proceeding. I would have clammed up as well and asked for counsel or just remained silent.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Fisher, I believe that you know Mark Class. He's the gold standard. His daughter Polly was kidnapped, sex assaulted, and murdered by Richard Allen. She was having a spend the night party in her mom's home. When police came to search Mark Class's place, he opened the door and said, "Here, take my fingerprints, search my place, search my car, search my office, do whatever you want. Then you can move on to find out who took my daughter." Okay? He was willing to take a polygraph. I find it very odd that faced with your child disappearing and a violent attack on your wife in a parking lot, that you refuse a polygraph and lawyer up. I got a problem with that.
I agree. I mean, if a child goes missing, even if the public might be throwing accusations around, I mean, as a parent, if you have no guilt in it, I think it's the last thing going through your mind is, you know, failing a polygraph. You'd think they would be willing to submit to whatever would help investigators. And if the public's making those claims, then you have to tune that out. If you truly got nothing to do with it. But in this case, that's not what we saw. They told us they were cooperating. That's what the parents told the news. But it didn't seem like it, because the time I was there, they were in the house the whole time. They weren't out searching. And it doesn't sound like they were truly cooperating with authorities.
From the Southern California News Group, Rebecca Haro denies she went to the Big Five in Yucaipa days before she reported the kidnapping and told employees her car had been burglarized in the parking lot and asked if the business had surveillance cameras. The sheriff's department has yet to address the claims.
Little Emmanuel was first reported missing on August 14th. They have searched two counties, and they have still not found this little boy.
Baby Emmanuel, just 7 months old, reportedly goes missing out of a Big Five sporting goods parking lot there with his mother.
This is a seven-month-old baby that they are looking in the roughest terrain in the world for, and they bring out the baby's father, and he doesn't even bother to offer any kind of assistance, any kind of help.
Tonight, sources stating they know why baby Emmanuel will never be found. This, as witnesses state, the dad, Jake Harrow, asked for help in staging baby Emmanuel's kidnap. But there's another baby taking center stage. Listen.
The sister of Emmanuel was so badly injured at just 10 weeks, she was left unable to see, talk, or walk. The little girl is being raised by her adoptive mother, who renamed the child Promise Faith. At just 10 weeks old, Promise had an acute fractured rib, healing fractures of 6 ribs, a skull fracture, a brain hemorrhage, swelling of the neck, a healing fractured leg bone, and nutritional neglect. Caro and his former partner, Vanessa Avina, were both charged with child cruelty in 2018, to which Haro pleaded guilty.
Dr. Eric Eason, the injuries to baby Emmanuel's sister are overwhelming. And according to reports, she has cerebral palsy because of repeat abuse. How can that happen? How do you get cerebral palsy from beatings?
Well, it's trauma to the brain, and it's a blunt trauma. So a solid object struck the head, or the head struck a solid object, or some combination of the two. And so everything indicates that with the rib fractures and all the other fractures on the body in different stages of healing, that they were inflicted by another individual. And that's how the cerebral palsy can occur in a child due to injury to the brain.
And what's so disturbing, Dave Mack, is that a judge allowed Jake Harrow, the father in this case, that reportedly asked for help from store employees to set up his baby's kidnap, he got to walk free. He walked free. Isn't that true? The judge said, hey, I'm going to do you a favor. Judge Dwight W. Moore suspended Harrow's prison sentence and granted straight probation. What happened, Dave Mack?
He spent a couple of weeks picking up trash on the side of the road, Nancy, in a work release program.
Defense Attorney Philip Dubay, the baby cannot walk, talk, hear, see. He got probation. I guess you think his lawyer did a good job.
Well, of course he did. I mean, you cannot claim that that attorney was ineffective. I think the real question, though, is why the prosecution wasn't pounding its fists on counsel table, demanding that this judge impose prison, or why they didn't file what we call an affidavit of prejudice against the judge, and you get moved to a different court. It's my understanding.
Okay,
it was
so somehow you're somehow trying to blame the prosecutor for this. Well, I've got a truth bomb for you. Listen.
Jay Caro pled straight up to the court, which sometimes reporters get this wrong, and you call it a plea bargain. Judges are not allowed to plea bargain. Defendants can plea bargain with the prosecutor, but when a defendant pleads up to the court, they plead to everything that they've been charged with, and they're essentially throwing themselves on the mercy of the court.
It's called a blind plea in most jurisdictions. What that means is the prosecutor would only agree to a plea bargain for serious jail time. The defense wouldn't take it. And so they go to the judge blind, so to speak, and throw themselves on the mercy of the judge. The prosecutor disagreed. The prosecutor wanted hard jail time. It's the judge, Judge Dwight W. Moore, that went, to the prosecutor, yeah, you know what, screw you and the horse you rode in on. I'm going to give him straight probation. Even though he blinded the baby girl, he made her deaf, dumb, and mute, and she can't walk, and she has cerebral palsy. But hey, he actually said from the bench, I'm going to give you a break. I'm going to do you a favor. The prosecutor was doing a backflip. Listen.
In this case, a judge here in Riverside County happened to have been a visiting judge from San Bernardino County, gave Mr. Haro a suspended sentence, which means that instead of sending him to prison, he chose to give him probation and suspend prison time sort of over his head, meaning that if he violated his probation, he would then go to prison. My prosecutor in the courtroom objected to that and said on the record, we object. We think it's a prison case. You should send him to prison. And the judge decided that Mr. Haro deserved an extra break and gave him probation and basically 180 days of work release. That decision was absolutely outrageous. Mr. Haro should have been in prison at the time that this crime happened. And if that judge had done his job as he should have done, Emmanuel would be alive today.
That is Mike Hestron, the Riverside County District Attorney, saying, we beg for jail time. We demanded jail time. And Judge Dwight W. Moore threw us out of court and gave this guy straight probation. And what did he do? He goes into a store asking them to help him give an alibi, help him create a story that his child, his other child, was kidnapped. That is the woman, that is the person, Allie Neal, that you said, hey, there's no playbook for a parent who's lost a child. So maybe he was crying. Maybe he was really upset. That's the guy. He had already beaten one child into oblivion.
Okay. I want to backtrack because you were asking specific questions about his demeanor in the store and the clerk's perception mm-hmm. of his demeanor in the store. Do I think he mm-hmm. did it? 100% yes. I absolutely think he did it. And I completely agree that he should already be in jail for the other child abuse. So, this whole story just smacks of this wild, made-up lie. And I hope the wife is
going to
break.
Well, Allie Neal, are you sitting down, Allie?
I'm sitting down.
Are you sitting down? Simple.
Are you sitting down?
Well, you might need to lay down for what you're about to hear, Allie Neal.
At the end of their sentence, he told Jake, I'm giving you a big break today. Don't mess it up. But I want to point something out to you. I want to read to you the injuries. The child's name is Carolina. She's still alive today, but she is permanently bedridden. She has permanent damage, cerebral palsy, that is a result of long-term child abuse.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
She got out of the vehicle to change baby Emmanuel's diaper, and she was attacked from behind. But when she woke up from the attack, the baby is gone. No money is taken. There's no sex attack, no carjack, just the baby. No surveillance. No witnesses saw this. How can you look at the disappearance of baby Emmanuel without factoring in what Jake Haro did to this baby's sister, who was left forever in basically a vegetative state because of him? He pled guilty. It's not a question. Dubé will probably make it sound like, well, maybe it didn't happen. He pled guilty under oath in a court of law. He rolled the dice and he hit the jackpot because the judge gave him straight probation. And what does he do? According to reports, he tries to get store employees to help him stage a kidnap, the kidnap of another baby, baby Emmanuel. But before we move on, I want you to hear the Riverside County District Attorney Mike Hestrin, recount what happened to baby Emmanuel's sister.
I want to read to you the injuries that were presented in court to this judge at the time of that previous prosecution. Acute fracture of the posterior left rib, fifth rib, healing fractures of the posterior lateral 6th, 7th, and 10th through 12th ribs, healing fractures of the 6th and 9th through 12th ribs, partial bone fracture of the skull, brain hemorrhage, significant prevertebral soft tissue swelling of the neck, and a healing tibia fracture of the right leg.
You know, when you hear the district attorney reading off the injuries to the baby girl, who was, you know, just weeks old, you can numb yourself, but if you think about what he is saying, if you let your mind go to what he is saying, what was done to the baby is brutal, it's hateful, it's downright evil. What was done to this baby girl, and now baby Emmanuel, is missing. Now, according to sources, baby Emmanuel will never be found.
Haro's next-door neighbor is saying the body of Emmanuel Haro will never be found. After hearing police had Haro out by the 60 freeway, the neighbor says she can hear the coyotes at night like they are in the front yard and says she doesn't think the remains will be found. Quote, want something to be found? I'm pretty sure you could find a way. Sad to hear, but true. If you're a local here, you know that baby's gone.
Dave Mack, explain to me what the neighbors are saying.
They're pointing out, Nancy, that while it seems the area that you're talking about with Riverside and San Bernardino counties, there are a lot of areas that are very rural, okay? A lot of underbrush and coyotes. The coyotes are wild and they can hear them at night. And as the neighbor pointed out, they're so loud. They sound like they're right here in the front yard. And that's what she's pointing out. There are so many areas where if that's what your goal was, to get rid of something that nobody would find, you could do it in this area around the house within 2 or 3 miles. Could be totally lost.
I want to go to Steve Fisher joining us, a search and rescue specialist, owner of Search Investigations. Steve, if that's true, what the neighbor is saying, that Emmanuel's body will never be found, if the body had been disposed of out in one of these many, many open and desolate areas, could cadaver dogs find even a trace, a part of the baby, assuming coyotes had gotten to him first?
Yes. So, and listen, this is a huge, vast open area, and I do a lot of searches out in this area. And these are scavenger animals. It's not just coyotes, but there is a lot of mountain lion in that area. And they're opportunistic animals, and they will feed upon stuff like this, but they scatter the bones. They'll use them as salt licks sometimes. And I understand such a young child has softer bones than an adult. However, they'll spread those remains. It actually gives a wider area for then humans or canines to come in and search. And there still is going to be, a material left where the canines can pull scent. So, but it's not going to happen if they're not out searching. And that's, you know, where I have a problem lately is I don't see these searches happening. But yes, even if these predatory animals, we see it a lot in desert searches, it does happen, but they leave remains behind.
There is, of course, a remote chance baby Haro is still alive, that Emmanuel was sold or given away. But again, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. Dr. John Della Torre, we know that Jake Haro has a history of beating infants. So it makes me believe that the neighbor could be right, Dr. Della Torre.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just listening to the list of injuries that baby Catalina suffered, I mean, I almost want to cry. And you're right, Nancy. You know, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And we see someone who engage in sadistic, violent behavior against vulnerable children. And so more than likely, if something could have happened, and the same thing would have happened to baby Emmanuel. So are there other things that could have happened? Sure. But the most likely thing, the most probable thing, is that these two parents engaged in some nefarious act and baby Emmanuel is now gone and we're struggling to try to find him.
You know, let's clarify, when you say gone, you mean dead.
I do mean dead. Yes.
In the last days, Jake Harrow and wife Rebecca Harrow are in court.
Jake Harrow has a public defender who entered a not guilty plea for him at arraignment, and Rebecca Harrow's court-appointed private counsel, Jeff Moore, entered a plea of not guilty for her. Moore, from the firm Blumenthal & Moore, previously represented Louise and David Turpin, the parents serving a life sentence now for abusing their 13 children for years. In court, Jake Harrow is wearing a jail-issued red jumpsuit, indicating he is not in general population for his own protection, and Rebecca Harrow wearing blue jail uniform for the same reasons.
Oh, so they're getting protected from the other inmates. I got a question, Dubé. Why do you hire a defense attorney that lost the Turpin case?
Great question. And I happen to know who defense counsel is. He is private, but he's court appointed. So he was not privately retained. He was appointed by the court at taxpayer expense. This young couple is impoverished. They don't have a pot or a window to spend on private counsel.
Well, are you trying to make me feel sorry for them? Because they can't afford a high-priced defense attorney like you. They got a high-priced defense attorney. His name is Jeff Moore, and he's with Blumenthal & Moore. And he lost the case of Louise and David Turpin. They got life.
The firm has a contract with Riverside County to pick up all conflict cases where the public defenders declares a legal conflict of interest. So they are on an annual contract where they're basically paid a lump sum to represent everybody brought in on conflicts during the contractual period.
Well, they landed in a pot of honey, yet again, getting a veteran trial lawyer. That's not all. We hear, Dave Mack, that these two demons from hell that are presumed innocent until proven guilty are wearing special jumpsuits, which means they are not in general population. Why?
Well, it's for their own protection because of the charges, Nancy. At least that's what we're being led to believe. Because, you know, we all have heard jailhouse stories of how people who hurt children are treated with the way they should be treated. That's for their own protection.
Dave Mack, those two Turpins are alive and well, and you and I got to pay for three hots and a cot for those two, again, demons straight from hell. They're from hell. All those children abused, starved, beaten, kept in literally in chains, in closets. Now the question is, are these two wet cats in a barrel going to turn on each other? And I've got an indicator they will.
Jake and Rebecca O'Hara were brought in through separate doors at opposite sides of the courtroom. They did not appear to look at each other, and Jake Harrow kept his eyes on the judge. Rebecca Harrow was kept out of direct view by her private attorney appointed by the court, Jeff Moore from Blumenthal & Moore.
Don't you just love it, DBA, when your client and the co-defendant won't even look at each other in court? I've seen them sitting right beside each other in court, and they look the other way. They won't even look at each other. I smell a state's witness, and I think the state's witness is going to be Rebecca Harrow. I hope she doesn't get a sweetheart deal to testify against her husband. State, you don't need her. You don't need her to prove this case. What about it, Dubé?
I think you're absolutely correct, and I've said it from day one. I think at most, Rebecca was an accessory after the fact, meaning she was not complicit in the underlying homicide, but may have had a hand in covering it up so that her husband wasn't arrested. Still a crime. The legal good news for Rebecca is that that only carries 3 years at halftime and does not have a life top. So if in exchange she testifies against
me
for 3 years, I could live with
it. I'm just curious. Are you actually on something? This woman is not getting 3 years and walking free. That's not happening. The state doesn't even need her. You don't think she was there when baby Emmanuel was killed? She took part in the whole thing.
What proof is there that she had a hand in the murder, if there even was a murder? Seriously, it's my understanding the evidence against
Jay. Did you say if there even was a murder? Did you just say that?
Yes.
You're losing a lot of credibility right now, Dubé.
I could understand as to him, but what do you have on her?
other than she's got a black eye in a parking lot saying somebody said Ola kidnapped the kid and purportedly drove off. Right now, you've got nothing saying that she had a hand in that murder, if there was a murder.
We wait as justice unfolds. If you know or think you know anything about baby Emmanuel, please dial 909-387-8313. Repeat, 909-387-8313. And now, we remember an American hero, Officer Mark Reynolds, South Carolina State Police, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving wife, Brandy, and three daughters. American hero, Officer Mark Reynolds. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.